Nemo G.
Bonnie G.
Do you guys hear the word G a lot from Bonnie?
I call Jana G because Jana's been to India.
G we use, I think, Bonnie's probably
sure. You explain it.
But we use it as a term of love and respect, endearing. So a lot of times when you hear an Indian say Mahatma Gandhi, you'll hear Gandhi G. Mm-hmm. Just a loving, kind of respectful way to say somebody's name.
Yeah.
So we like being sincere but joking and enjoying that.
Enjoying it. Because technically I'm not supposed to call you G because you're younger.
Yeah, I'm younger. I call you G.
Okay.
Yeah.
When am I Didi?
Or Didi, yeah, so Didi is a big sister.
Big sister, that's also, okay.
But it's fun, love and respect.
Isn't this fascinating? Okay. So Nemo, it's just great to have you here, and what a beautiful song. Thank you so much for writing that and for being inspired to write that. No. Before we get to what inspired you to write that song, I'm not sure if everybody here knows you, so can you tell us a little bit about your journey, how you started from being an American rapper to living in Ahmedabad in the slum community and working with kids there?
Sure, I can share a little. My name is Nimesh Patel, nickname Nemo. But I enjoyed doing music since I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I think my first music video I ever created was on calculus. it was in an AP calculus class. We got done with our test, and the teacher's like, "Do a project." And but I think I enjoyed that experience of expressing through words and through song and poetry. I think we all have our forms of expression, and eventually it led me on my journey to want to pursue this, a career in entertainment and business also. But something down the line, eventually, I think 10 years after I graduated, and there were a lot of things along the way that chipped away at me asking, what am I really doing? And what am I really doing with my life? And I think that that constant questioning, the nagging of the heart, eventually led me to this the journey of service, which I think we're all a part of in small ways and big ways in our everyday lives. But there was this one quote that I always remember that Gandhiji shared, and it was, the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. And at 30, I felt I was lost.
You were lost.
I was lost, yeah. And I'm not going to share the material context around that, but it doesn't really matter because I think that feeling is inside, mm-hmm. And I think that was the feeling of I didn't feel happy. And I feel like as human beings, we have that potential to be very happy and not suffer mentally. If we desire that path, then there's a way to find it.
Yeah.
And so I think that led me to being in Ahmedabad in India, where I've been for the last 12 years. It's been a blessing to have you and different family members that have had the chance to join us and serve there. But it's become an oasis for me to learn. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the last decade has been the true education. Mm. And I think that could happen anywhere. It doesn't have to be in India. I have roots there, so it kind of connected the dots for me there.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's kind of, been the journey.
I love that Gandhi quote. I'll paraphrase it because I don't, quotes don't stay in my head very well anymore, but just to find yourself, you lose yourself, and that actually, it feels like the message of so many different religions, and certainly the theology that we have here is so paradoxical, one of the things that I have been speaking about lately is the simultaneous feeling of feeling humbled and exalted at the same time. Mm. Humble in that, oh my gosh, how did this happen? How are any of us in a body? What a miracle that is. And so that's so humbling to be part of something so great. And then the exalted part is, oh my God, I'm part of something great. So it's just that beautiful thing, that beautiful paradox that brings us into the what I call like the crevice of mysticism, that where we can't really explain it, but it's just there.
Yeah.
It's just there, and we feel it more than explain it. So I appreciate that so much. Gosh, Nemo, there's so much I want to ask you, but since we listened to that song, what inspired you to write the song Dear God?
Yeah, I actually wrote it I started it 15 years ago, and it was a song that I, it was called Conversation with God.
Yes, like the book?
Oh, I haven't read that.
Oh, well, okay, we'll
talk. I need to read that.
Yeah.
But it was really that. It was like, I think it was inspired by this idea, like, if I did have a conversation with God, how would it go?
Mm.
And this song is an evolution of that that I wrote, I think, in 2013. But in 2007, when I wrote that, it was this idea of like, man, I'd be so curious to just have a chat, have some chai, and like, man, what do you think about all these religions that are like, they say that you actually created them or that they're inspired by you. How do you feel about it? You know, like, are you excited? Are you happy? So I think it came from that space of, you know, I'm a pragmatic by heart,
mm-hmm.
even though I feel like I've lived, trying my best to live through my heart.
Mm-hmm.
There's been in my journey the idea of pragmatism, skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us have that. So it was kind of like, man, like, God, you're so amazing. You're so awe-inspiring. And yet we've kind of brought you down to this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's
mm-hmm.
going on? Like, mm-hmm. you got to answer these questions because mm-hmm. We all need answers.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was coming from, I think, that space of trying to, and then also from my own journey, you know, growing up, mom and dad immigrated from India in the 60s, and their staple spot for us growing up was the temple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where they were able to connect with their community that had immigrated also, the religion that they had been brought up on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like without those seeds, I wouldn't even probably be in a space to start this journey.
Mm. Wonderful.
So it's like their practice, which I, as a child, most of the time we kind of blindly follow,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have the capacity to understand or question. So it's that path that they paved for us or that we all paved for our children that then gives you kind of like here, go check it out yourself.
Yeah.
See what, you know, see what you feel and think. And that's kind of, I think, the journey of the song as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wonderful. So in your conversation with God,
right.
Did he or
he
she?
He didn't allow me to record it.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah,
we'll catch that. Yeah, yeah. Did I would wonder if he or she or it or
mm-hmm.
whatever,
yeah.
love, whatever it is, said, yeah, the humans kind of took this mysterious thing and kind of put it into a little box that they could understand. And there's this great saying by Anne Lamott. Like, she said something like, if your God hates the people that you hate, then chances are you've made God in your image versus the other way around. And it seems like that's, I don't know, that's what God told me. I don't know if God said anything like that to you.
Well, I'm sure it's pretty similar because there's that one God. I'm sure he was saying the same message.
Oh, same thing to everybody. Yeah, yeah. But in different nuances. Yeah, but it's it seems so amazing to me. And that's part of the reasons why in this particular center and because of so much interfaith that
right.
I've done and others here have done is that we just feel, you know, I mean, people ask me, is this an interfaith church? And I'm like, what do you think? You know, I mean, we've got Spartacus back there, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers, and
I know.
My favorite.
Yeah, I know. But that God is too big of a mystery to be understood, and that's why we sing, "I am remembering who I am," is because we know that maybe even this is inadequate, but saying, I am, not from the little I, but from the great I, mm-hmm. the great I am that I am. Even Ramana Maharshi, you know, said Moses really got it right with I am that I am. So that right. that it's just too big to contain in mere words.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think it's, you know, I always think, I love that saying that, you know, we have all these religions, but God did not have a religion,
right?
You know, and this idea that I remember this one. I mean, this goes beyond this topic a little, but it's just this little segment in the movie Gandhi.
Yeah.
And you know, Gandhi's leaving a location at an ashram. I think it was in South India or in Maharashtra, and he's leaving, and then all the Hindu followers come and stop his car and say, I thought you were Hindu, and
mm-hmm.
they were kind of getting upset at him, and he steps out of the car, and, you know, it looks like there was going to be a riot, and he's like, you know, the first thing that he's like, I am Hindu,
mm-hmm.
and I am Muslim,
mm-hmm.
and I am Jain, and I am Christian, and all of these are different interpretations of love.
Yes.
For God, you know, and I think ultimately that's what, you know, we're saying.
Yeah, know? Yeah. It's like, I mean, there's many flowers. Many people relate to flowers in different
right.
ways, and there's many flowers of religion. You know, and it's like, it's not one size fits all. And I'm going to ponder what you said, that God didn't have a religion. That's pretty cool. Does God have a God?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I know. I say that my service dog, Barty, needs a service dog. So my service dog has a service dog. Barty's
exactly.
not really a service dog. He needs a service dog. But anyway, that's off the topic. But yeah, God doesn't have a religion, and yet we make it into a religion. But
it's our all of our bridges to reach there.
It is.
You know?
It is. And certainly there's nothing. You know, I keep reiterating this, is that there is nothing more beautiful than being human. Nothing more beautiful than being human. Well,
yeah.
Unless you're a dog, that's beautiful too. Nothing more beautiful than being incarnated here.
Right.
That it's just amazing. And this beautiful idea that there's this horizontal plane of existence and then this vertical plane of existence that intersect in the heart of compassion. It's just
that's
an amazing
awesome.
Thing. Just an amazing yeah. thing. And what a heart you have. And let's talk about the end of that video when all of those people's hearts, yours in the desert. What was the inspiration for that?
I don't know if you saw that quote at the end.
Yeah. And let me just in case anybody missed it, I have to confess, I missed it the first time.
Okay.
But I was listening to the lyrics, but at the end, when Nemo is finally having his revelation in the video, his heart, there's a gold light in the center of his heart, and then when you're standing on the street corner, which it's probably L.A. No?
Yeah, it was Sunset or Hollywood Boulevard.
Hollywood Boulevard,
yeah.
Cool. He starts looking at the people and he starts seeing the light emerging from their hearts as well.
Yeah.
So tell me about the inspiration for that.
So, I mean, on one level, it is just that ultimately if we're connecting to God, whatever
mm-hmm.
faith we have, right? Because ultimately, if our goal is that love, then it should, I hope, that it would translate to seeing God in everyone,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the quote at the end of the song by Newman that, you know, I don't even remember the exact words, but it was that, I looked for God and I went to the topmost steeple and God said, oh, wrong direction. Head back down because I am amongst the people.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea of making it real that while we're here on earth, we have that. Oh, yeah.
Look at our great tech people.
Yeah.
You want to read that out loud?
I sought to hear the voice of God and climbed the topmost steeple, but God declared with a smile and a loving heart, go down again. I dwell amongst the people.
John Henry Newman. For a minute, I thought you meant Newman on Seinfeld.
Could be.
Could be.
Because God is in him, too.
God is in him, too. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, to me, this idea that, It's hard. It's
yes.
not easy to do that.
No.
But I feel like that's a direction to head in.
Yeah.
You know, the moment we can see a few more glows in a few more people
yeah.
today and tomorrow maybe a few more people.
Yeah.
That's the right path.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know, and in a way it's the right path because it's the more difficult path. Like you said, it's hard. You know, it's easy to get, I was reading about charismatic religions yesterday, and nothing wrong, nothing disparaging about it, but it becomes sort of like an addiction to see God where you're getting all emotional and all hyped up and all worked up in a frenzy of faith, right? But to see God in the person that is giving you a difficult time, the person that is different than you, the person that doesn't believe that as you do politically, the person that doesn't believe the same as you about any issue, you know, that's where it's hard.
Tough.
And that's where it's like weightlifting, you know, that without that resistance, you don't get stronger, right?
Absolutely. That's a good way to
look
at it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll share a thought after.
I think you should go because I think mine's going to be different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday we were walking on the beach and this is in Oxnard and we were just, mom, dad, and I were just checking sunset out and we enjoyed that moment. And then we started walking away and these two wonderful young ladies just smile at all of us and they start sharing and saying, you know, where are you guys from? And And they had a beautiful spirit, which was awesome. And so we started talking, and they said, you know, you can tell within a few questions that they were missionaries.
Yeah.
And then they asked, you know, do you believe in God? And or do you have a God do you believe in? And I was like, wow, it's fresh on it's fresh on my list because I just finished a song and this topic that expresses my exact feeling on that. And I was sharing with them. And then they were sharing about, you know, their Mormon background,
yeah,
and kind of what they do. But what
but
was beautiful?
One of our congregants met those same missionaries at the beach.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, mm-hmm, yeah, I think we've all met them.
Okay, yeah.
They're famous.
Yeah.
They're doing a good job.
Yeah. they're getting out there, yeah.
I think my old self would have crept into this skepticism.
Yeah.
And I feel like the better self that I hope to be has, like, wow, that's amazing. They're spreading their version of love,
yeah,
without harming anybody, hopefully. And it was just kind of a positive experience just to kind of just chat with them and share, and just I could understand where they're going and what their hope is. But ultimate hope is, like, bring love into people's hearts, and that's the way they see it. And so it was like a beautiful experience that I felt, you know.
That is beautiful,
very on topic in a way.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. Yeah, just that there's many, many different expressions of love.
Yeah,
and that's as it should be, right? Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
I don't know if I should say this in church, but I will. my challenge with Mormon missionaries is that I want to sing the opening song to the Book of Mormon every time I see them, and I can barely keep it in. And it's like, hello, my name is Elder Price. Anyway, moving on, let me elevate the conversation again. The scene with the hearts that you had, where the hearts are starting to glow and you're starting to see it everywhere.
Yeah.
It reminded me so much of a quote from a Christian author, Thomas Merton, and it's a famous story where he's standing on the street corner in St. Louis. Do you know this story?
Mm-mm.
In Louisville, rather, and he starts to see the presence of God in everybody, and it's just an ordinary day. And it's rather a long quote, so I just brought in a little bit of it, but I wanted to read it to you and to others.
Awesome.
And Merton wrote, "There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around, shining like the sun. Then it was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts. If only they could all see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time.
Mm.
There would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. But this cannot be seen, only believed and understood by a peculiar gift. Whatever that gift is going down." And I thought about what the gift was, and this is from Cynthia Bourgeau, another Christian author, and she said, "We are the veil. We are the veil that hides the paradise we seek."
Mm.
And how wonderful.
Beautiful.
To know that the only thing that's getting in our own way is...
Which is a lot of work in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
The inner work.
Yeah, the inner work. The only thing that's getting in the way is the inner work. And yet, in the way is the way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You got that?
Got it.
You all got that? People are shaking their heads. You didn't get that? Okay. Yeah, she's nodding. Okay. Yeah, that what is in the way is actually the way. The thing that we think, I have to think about this so much because, you know, I get a lot of both praise and blame in this position, as I'm sure,
mm-hmm,
you know, you do working in the work that you do as a musician and also working with the kids. But, you know, it's the way is narrow between praise and blame. And anything that feels like blame is actually me fighting with an aspect of myself.
Mm.
Any attachment to praise is me fighting with an aspect of myself. And what if the inner work is just to let go of the fight and say, ah, yes, I welcome this too. I welcome this. Mm. I welcome this. And talk about seeing the light in your heart and talking about seeing the light in the person standing in front of you who's either giving you a great time or a hard time.
Mm.
How wonderful is that? How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing all the talking.
No.
Talking too much.
I love it.
Okay.
I love listening to what you're saying.
Thank you.
But I feel like what you're saying is, in a practical world for me, it's like when there is a challenge,
mm-hmm,
it's the opportunity, right? And I I remember this one moment that I had when I was in a rickshaw. Mm-hmm. Rickshaws are those three-wheeled taxis in India, and they're kind of open on both sides. But I remember I was going to my brother's house, and it was a long drive. It was like a 45-minute drive. The rickshaw driver kind of like turned the thing to make the mileage go further so that the reading at the end would be much more than what I'd owe him. Mm-hmm. And I saw it, but I was like, well, let me just see how this unfolds, because maybe he wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I get to my brother's house, and what was supposed to be like a 120 rupee rickshaw ride was a 500 and something rupee rickshaw ride. Mm. And I've done that trip many times, so I knew that. And it like, it like this fire started burning.
And it wasn't like, the light in your heart.
And it wasn't the light. I wasn't seeing the light in the rickshaw driver at the moment. Okay. I had seen the light when we started.
Right.
And so, you know, and I look back and I went back and forth and I really got upset. And I was very kind of like strong worded with him.
Yeah.
In a way, just to let him know there's boundaries. Like, you can't cheat somebody, you know?
Right.
But when I left, I didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a better way to deal with that. And I feel like I look back in that moment and I'm like, these are the moments.
Yeah.
These are the tests that we get, the opportunities when people treat us poorly, when somebody cuts us off. In our daily life, we're getting a few of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those are the exams. That's the, like you're saying, what's in the way
Yes.
is ourselves and the taking this as an opportunity versus the natural path of least resistance is to just fight it.
Right.
You know,
Right. And
I deeply believe what you're saying is so true, that we have so many chances to work on ourselves and to chip away at that veil.
Every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Limiel, let me give folks an example of a time when I feel like you really did chip away at that veil. Okay, where you really, like, you exalted me and humbled me. And that was back in 2019 when Nemo was leading a troop of children.
Our kiddos.
Your kiddos, the Jay Jagat children. And will you tell them what Jay Jagat means?
Well, Jay Jagat means, you might hear in India, you'll hear the word Jay once in a while, but it means kind of hail to or victory to, and Jagat means the planet. So the name of our project and our tour and our show is called Jai Jagat. It means, you know, all love and glory to planet Earth.
Yes.
And that was the show that we had brought here.
Yes.
To our kids were standing here.
They were
with the horsey.
The horse and the donkey. Many people here are familiar with the horse and the donkey. Any little excuse to get a horse and a donkey on the stage is fair game. But, you know, I had seen the show in India, and I was really excited about the kids coming, and our congregation raised funds for them to come. And we really worked on it. It became a huge project and lots of anticipation, lots of excitement. And then maybe 3 or 4 days before they were about to come, before they were destined to get on the plane, they still didn't have their visas.
Their visas
to get on the plane. And so there was a team of volunteers from various places in the country, in the world, actually working together to get these, bring these kids to the various venues around the world. And Nemo was on a call, and he said something like, it's okay. If we don't get our visas, it's okay. It's not really about the finished product. And I was like, what? It is so not okay. I want those children on this stage because I love them, and I love the show, and I want the congregation to see them. It's so not okay. And then it was. Explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a trying time.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You put, it's kind of like all of us, right? When we put our all our eggs in a basket and you're like hoping for the best. But that, again, that's the opportunity.
Yes.
You know, and we had gone full board about 2 years in development with the children. And this is a very in-depth, so you get really close to all their families and we all become a big family. And then the global family becomes a big part of the journey, because there's this whole almost 6 month to a year planning process to bring 25 people from India to America and do a full, and the UK and do a full two-month tour. So in the visa process, it's crazy, you know, to get passports for our children, it's a big deal because they don't have homes per se with addresses, right? They're all living in very shanty town type of slum areas. So the passport process was a miracle. The visa process was really a miracle to get the application through, and we had a law firm doing everything pro bono, which was a big help. After a miracle of the application process, getting it approved finally, then you get an interview. We go down for the interview. This is about, I think, a week before the first show that was supposed to happen in San Francisco. And we get there, and I had done this type of experience with another group of kids in 2012. So that time we went without our parents, without the kids' parents, I mean. Mm-hmm. So we went for the interview. The first few people that are in, and it took us all day, so it's like a 10-hour process. And I'm literally myself and one other person's waiting outside the U.S. Embassy. This is in Mumbai. And the 17 kids and some of the six, seven mentors went inside for the interviews. About 8 hours later, two people could come out. So our team finally started getting interviewed. Two people come out saying, we don't have our passports. They gave us the visas. But they'll ship it to us in a few days. So it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. About 45 minutes later, a few more come out. And then about an hour later, the next person comes out saying, they're calling everybody back in. Mm-hmm. So they call them back in, and they, because the first, about like the eighth person was one of our kids that was 13 years old, Bhavna. And they made a new rule over the past year that 14 years old and younger have to have parents there. And so about six of our kids were under 14, and we didn't bring our parents because we knew from previous experience. So anyways, over the next 2 hours, they gathered everything, gave our passports back to us, and said, no visas. And we were a week away from leaving for a trip, which obviously had to be canceled now, the whole tour that we'd been planning for a year. And so then it just became a conversation of what we're going to do from here, you know. And I think there's obviously the instant dampening of the heart that this is not going to happen. But at the same time, as human beings, I mean, what else are you going to do? You're going to be like,
oh, I have a few ideas.
So I remember Lucky Didi, one of our other mentors, and I having conversations like, we're going to do something beautiful still. And we're going to take the kids on a train across India, and we'll improvise and kind of just make the best out of this journey that we've been on together, and to share the message that we have. At the same time, parallel, emailing everybody in the world that we could, you know, and kind of working both of those journeys together. And before you know, I get a call. This is like 2 weeks later. So our whole plan has been changed. We're aiming for new dates, which is crazy because these venues we booked like half a year ago. And I get a email from the embassy saying, don't bring the kids, don't bring no parents, just bring you and the passports. Mm. So I went there, and he gave me a date. Went there on Monday. On the date, I booked a hotel right next to the embassy. Bring the passports, go to the area. The guy opens the door, says, we're closed today. I'm like, but I have this email. He's like, sorry, we're closed. Go to the security. So I go to this main security. He says they're closed. I say, I have this email. He calls somebody. That guy says, okay, send him back over. I go back there. Nobody opens the door. So I go back to the hotel. I email on my phone. I go back to the hotel. And then literally within 3 minutes, I get an email back saying, we apologize. Come back to that back door. I go there. They open the door for me. They walk me in, take all our passports. Says, come back in 2 hours. I come back in 2 hours. And then I think this guy name was Jeffrey. He says, we don't do this for anybody. Like, we would never be able to give visas like this without the people who are actually getting the visas, and especially for the kids, their parents here. But actually, it was you that gave me, so myself and Virenbhai, we gave Jeff and another guy a tour of the Gandhi Ashram like 2 or 3 months prior. And it was when the U.S. Embassy, so there was just some linkage, and they had done research on us just to double check and everything. And he was like, that was the reason. Like, we're just giving it to you guys. We believe in you. We trust you. And some miracle happened. And we literally bought tickets that night. And we flew out 2 days later to Los Angeles yeah. as our first thing. And it was That's just wonderful. Kind of, a, so it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, at least the lesson for me is definitely you try your best.
Yeah.
Right. With anything. And yeah. then letting go is hard, but that has to be a part of the process. Otherwise, there's so much suffering available to be given to you,
yes.
you know?
yes.
And then also, you know, I feel like some of that energy also allows for something beautiful to unfold if it's going to.
Yeah.
But I think if my heart and even other team members were not prepared to make the best of it, no matter what happened, we were in a really bad place.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It sounds like a beautiful balance of surrendering, but also doing what you could do. And yet
Absolutely.
Surrendering, yeah. Yeah. But also one of the things that you said to me that I thought was so beautiful too, you know, once I got over my horror of you guys not coming, was that for the children, it was so much more than just a performance. It was much more about a process that they were building and a community that they were building. And just, we're almost out of time. So just maybe say just a few words about what that was.
Yeah, I think from the get-go, for me, it's always been about the process with our kids and with our children. And if I go back to the old mechanism of the way I used to work, which is you put a goal out there and you try to achieve the goal. Mm-hmm. And if I did that same routine here in this work, I knew I was just in this, I was wearing the same costume, you know, as mm-hmm. as before. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't changing anything. So to me, this has become the journey, the process is the spiritual process,
yeah.
which is focusing on relationships with the children, developing virtues and values that we practice and believe and act upon together. And of course, we have external things like choreography and show and performance that becomes a big, important part of the process. But if the values and the virtues are not aligned, mm-hmm. then there's no purpose mm-hmm. To perform on stage, you know? And so I think it's always been that, and I feel like the team that we had was also aligned with that, adults, the mentors, that this is going to be a journey of developing ourselves as a family and as good human beings as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And hey, we're going to dance and perform a show. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. a part of it.
So, you know. Yeah, so that reminds me of another person that I will misquote, who's Shakespeare, and I'm sure I'll hear about it at home. But that the world is a stage and we're merely players, nothing but players.
Right.
And so what you're saying about the J.J. Gutt children is so, I think, so relevant to all of us, is that it's not necessarily as much about the goals as we want to make it. It's so much more about cultivating the relationships, cultivating the values, cultivating the virtues, and then really living from that place. Part of the joy of that is remembering that that's really what we're here to do. Getting the goals are great, and sometimes you get great surprises, and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you get disappointments. It's all God, but probably, what keeps us aligned with all of that is many things, but most certainly the things that you said: cultivating the relationships, cultivating the values, cultivating the virtues, being really clear about what that is, and then living like that truth is true. Thank you. Thank you. Nemo?
Thank you, Bunny G.
Is there anything we can do to support you?
This is it. It's like, we're building community together, and we're doing it in our all our different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And yet we're still, like, connecting, like, where's our sister Sylvia?
Sylvia from Spain, yes.
I mean,
Hi,
I had a chance to do an awaken circle in her apartment in Burgos.
In Burgos.
And spend time with her daughter and family, and it's just... Thank you guys for connecting the dots and being the change in that way. So
we're
doing it.
It's our pleasure. And Sylvia lives in Spain on the Camino de Santiago. So I think several of us will be stopping by one of these days. Hope you don't mind. Okay. So anyway, thank you for that. That thing that we're all doing. Relationships, values, virtues, connecting the dots, so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. You can stay up here. I'm going to do a prayer, quick prayer.
Yes.
We're going to do our little offering, and then you're going to sing a song. How about that?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So let me just get in my prayer mode here. Okay.